Today is March 26th, 2008, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 120. That's right, 120. It's a podcast for the Mac Observer, and I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaff, an editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com. Oh, I didn't bring my guns to this particular outing.
Oh, man.
Shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com.
You lied to me. You brought guns.
I always have my guns with me, man. You know, it's hard to believe that in a mere 880 episodes, we'll be at 1,000.
I know. Time flies when you're having fun. I don't even remember doing episode number 100.
You know, we passed by episode 100. I had kept mentioning – this is before we started actually putting the episode number in the title or mentioning it in the show. But we'd always put it in the meta information on the MP3 file. And I kept meaning to tell you, hey Jeff, we've got episode 100 coming up, man. We should do something. We should, you know, we should make a big deal about it.
Yeah, we should. Oh wait.
Yeah.
Well, we'll pick. Okay, here's what we ought to do. We should pick a random episode, and we'll make that one the big extravaganza.
Oh, don't tell them.
Oh, it's okay. My memory is like crap most of the time, so when we do it, it'll be a surprise to me too.
All right, that's great. That's great. And, you know, I have to say that sometimes I think that we should be recording our practices and the talk before we actually start recording this, because this time we were looking back into the history of our gang and the Little Rascals.
We were, and I'm sure it would have been just totally riveting for all of our listeners.
Lots of people would have laughed, and most of them would have been laughing at us. But you know, hey, that's okay.
Hey, you know, that's showbiz.
Yep. Who out there listens, or watched, I should say, to the Little Rascals and Our Gang, or who remembers them? I personally was watching them as a kid in the 70s on syndicated TV.
As was I, and we realized I'm one up on you on that, because I've actually seen a lot of the original silent episodes as well.
Yeah, and I haven't, but I actually can maybe one-up you, at least by association. One of my best friends since seventh grade, he's still one of my best friends today, caddied for Spanky.
Okay, you so one-upped me there. Yeah, you totally trumped me there.
Mm-hmm. Or something.
Hey, you know, take it as you can get it, right?
Trump by association. All right. Well, with that, we should probably get on with the tasty news. Thanks for joining us today, folks. And here we go.
Apple scratched one lawsuit off its list this week and put smiles on the faces of Airport Extreme owners. Adobe offered some clarification on its iPhone flash plans. Sony is considering an iPod-compatible music subscription service. Microsoft still has its sights on Yahoo. And a new Apple documentary is coming to the Wisconsin Film Festival. And this week's quick tip, quitting leopards print spools.
A May 2007 lawsuit against Apple that alleged the company misled customers with claims of the number of colors its laptop displays can show finally has some closure. Apple settled out of court with the plaintiffs over undisclosed terms, according to the Chicago Tribune. The class action suit was filed last May by two pro photographers, Fred Greaves and Dave Gatley, after the two bought Apple laptops based on the company's claims that the displays can show millions of colors. The suit alleged, quote, the displays are only capable of displaying the illusion of millions of colors through the use of a software technique referred to as dithering, unquote. The attorney for Mr. Greaves and Mr. Gatley, Peter Polishuk, said that Apple, quote, made a misrepresentation. They have a drop-down menu in macOS 10 that lets you choose to display millions of colors, unquote. He added that his clients chose not to pursue the class action suit any further because they couldn't find enough people that bought a MacBook or MacBook Pro strictly on Apple's claims that the displays show millions of colors.
Apple made many Airport Extreme base station owners happy last week with its Time Machine and Airport Update 1.0 and Time Capsule and Airport Base Station 802.11n firmware 7.3.1 updates. While the updates do improve overall Time Machine and Time Capsule compatibility, the big news for most base station owners was the return of true AirDisk support under macOS 10.5. This means that a USB hard drive can be connected to an 802.11n base station and used as a network Time Machine backup drive. All of the updates are free and necessary to enable Time Machine support, so be sure all are installed before trying to set up your networked USB hard drive backup.
Last week, we mentioned that Adobe CEO announced the company was planning on using the iPhone Software Developer Kit, or SDK, to write a version of Flash for the iPhone and iPod Touch. Now his company has changed its tune and is saying it needs to collaborate with Apple to make that happen. The company said in a statement that it had evaluated the SDK and, quote, "To bring the full capabilities of Flash to the iPhone web browsing experience, we do need to work with Apple beyond and above what is available through the SDK and the current license around it. We think Flash availability on the iPhone benefits Apple and Adobe's millions of joint customers, so we want to work with Apple to bring these capabilities to the device." Unquote. Apple has not commented on whether or not it will work with Adobe. Did you like that, Jeff?
Your inflection was wonderful. I felt like I was in the Adobe boardroom.
Thank you. But CEO Steve Jobs has already stated that he isn't interested in bringing Flash to the iPhone or iPod Touch in its current state because of performance issues.
Okay, and I just have to add, I was chuckling loud enough that I accidentally knocked my headphones out and had to put them back in.
Excellent.
All right. Adobe announced the immediate availability of Photoshop Elements 6 for the Mac on Monday. The new version of the consumer digital image editing application includes a new task-oriented interface, along with a version of Bridge CS3 tailored for Element 6 users. The new version of the image editor sports a redesigned interface with tab-based tool organization. It also includes a guided edit mode that steps users through improving digital photos, a photo merge tool that creates seamless panoramas from a series of images, the ability to blend the best parts from multiple group shots, and one-click color correction, and a lot more. Photoshop Element 6 also includes a version of Bridge CS3 geared towards consumer users. Bridge supports folder groupings, file search and filtering, the ability to display image metadata, support for keywords, save searches, and a digital loop. Photoshop Element 6 for the Mac requires macOS 10.4.8 or higher, or macOS 10.5.2, and it is universal binary. It's priced at $89.99, that's US dollars, or $69.99 for upgrades from earlier versions.
Sony BMG is apparently working on an online music subscription service designed to be compatible with a wide range of portable music players, including Apple's iPod product line. The news comes from Sony BMG Music Entertainment CEO Rolf Schmidt-Holtz. While Mr. Schmidt-Holtz was willing to say that Sony is developing a subscription service, he wasn't willing to share when consumers should expect the service to launch. Pricing for the service hasn't been set yet either, but Mr. Schmidt-Holtz said, quote, "The simplest option would be a flat rate," unquote. That rate will likely fall somewhere between the 6 euro and 8 euro range, or $9.33 to $12.46, give or take a little bit, per month, for unlimited access to Sony BMG's complete music catalog. Mr. Schmidt-Holtz also said that his company was working on the newest in automobile accessories, wooden wheels, saying, quote, "We think customers have gotten tired of experiencing flat tires, and we see the wooden wheel as the ultimate solution for driving comfort," unquote. Okay, he didn't actually say any of that. So far, music subscription services haven't been able to compete with the popularity of Apple's iTunes Store, which lets users purchase songs instead of rent them. Sony may, however, have a twist that could help its subscription service compete with the iTunes Store. According to Mr. Schmidt-Holtz, it's possible, quote, that clients could keep some songs indefinitely, that they would own them even after the subscription expired, unquote, and that would be a first of its kind rental scheme. Just how Sony's rent some, keep some plan would work, however, remains to be seen, especially since consumers seem to be more interested in digital music purchases instead of rentals right now.
And Microsoft isn't ready to give up on its bid to buy out the internet search company Yahoo and may raise its $31 per share offer. Citigroup analysts expect that eventually the two companies will reach a buyout agreement despite Yahoo's talks with other companies. Analyst Mark Mahoney commented, quote, "While we continue to see no other competing bidders, we believe Yahoo is aggressively pursuing strategic alternatives. We believe this could serve as a forcing function to hire Microsoft's bid," unquote. Microsoft presented Yahoo with an unsolicited buyout offer at the beginning of February after the search company reported a 23% drop in earnings. Yahoo rejected the buyout offer, claiming that the bid undervalued the company, and Microsoft responded by reaffirming its plans to continue pursuing the buyout. Yahoo has since revealed that it has been involved in talks with Time Warner to take over control of AOL. If approved, the deal would give Time Warner a minority stake in Yahoo and make Microsoft's takeover attempt far more difficult.
Motorola revealed on Wednesday that it is splitting off its handset division as a separate company and plans on completing the process of turning its mobile devices and broadband and mobility solutions divisions into a separate publicly traded company by the end of 2009. The move to shed its handset division comes as the company continues to lose cell phone market share. The plan could, however, fall apart if something goes wrong during the financial and tax and legal analysis process. Motorola has dropped from the number one cell phone maker to third place worldwide. Whether or not the split will help Motorola better compete with the likes of Nokia, Research in Motion, and now Apple remains to be seen.
And finally in the news, Welcome to Macintosh, the documentary for the rest of us, is a new documentary about the world of Apple and the Mac, and it's scheduled to premiere on April 6th. At the 10th Annual Wisconsin Film Festival. The feature-length film explores how Apple and its products have changed the computer industry and the world. The documentary includes interviews with longtime Apple community personalities like Guy Kawasaki, Andy Hertzfeld, and Leander Caney, along with Mac users, collectors, and fans. Co-directors Josh Rizzo and Robert Baca will be at the film festival to participate in a question and answer session following the premiere screening. Tickets for the documentary are available at the Wisconsin Film Festival website.
And it's time for the Context Machine, where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
Yes, we do. And I think what's going on first is Adobe's apparent backpedaling on the whole Flash thing with the iPhone.
Well, I wouldn't call it backpedaling, even though I might have inferred some kind of disapproval in my putting an announcer voice on the CEO statement. I actually think that Adobe should be commended for so quickly ascertaining the fact that the SDK isn't going to let them do what they want to do.
You know, first, let me say that you so entertained me with your entertainer voice or your announcer voice. That was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I intentionally chose the word backpedal when I brought up the topic, because I've seen that used just throughout a lot of different news sites. And it looks to me like a lot of places are saying that Adobe said one thing and now they're having to backpedal and say something else. And I'm actually on the same side of the fence as you with this one. I think Adobe took a look at what they had and said, dude, let's write Flash for the iPhone. And then they continued to look more and more into what is involved with the whole SDK and went, oh, well, we're going to have to work with Apple on this one after all. And then they immediately told everyone this is what they have to do. So good for them.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it is – I have issues with Flash, mainly that, as we've discussed, I think that most Flash development for – what? Oh boy, let me – I'm going to get in trouble here. Most Flash development in terms of trying to offer an entire site in Flash is done poorly.
I will agree with you on that. I see a lot of gratuitous Flash.
A lot of gratuitous Flash. VajaCases.com, VajaCases.com, is a shining example of everything that can go right with Flash. It is.
Okay, that's a, yeah. Okay, here's another great example for you. Adobe, of course, Adobe should be able to create a good Flash-based site. They have a site called Kolor. It's K-O-L-O-R. And it's part of their whole Adobe Labs thing. And it's this whole Flash-based site where you can create color schemes, and it's actually really, really cool. And it's Flash, and it works really well. It's an excellent example of using Flash correctly.
Mm-hmm. There are many sites out there that are great. However, I think there are many more that are not. Now, another really cool thing, like if you remember, like the first thing that Flash was used for was for developing interactive elements of a website.
Right.
Right. It was something that you would use to make a puzzle or a game or whatever. And I think that those tend to be really, really cool and, quite frankly, you know, oftentimes lots of fun. And I've seen some just brilliantly innovative design along those lines. So, all that said, there you know, can often be a lot of problems with a site that is based entirely in Flash, especially when the developers of that site haven't made allowances for people that don't have Flash or haven't, you know, done everything that they need to on their end to make sure that the site is going to be compatible with a web browser that doesn't have Flash installed. Right?
Right. Right. Right?
So all that said, it is clearly very important to Adobe to get Flash on the iPhone. It's far more important for Adobe than it is for Apple.
Right. And, okay, so here's where I see one of the big problems with the whole Flash thing, and it's the performance issue. So if Apple and Adobe collaborate on producing a Flash player for the iPhone, and of course the iPod Touch as well, I think that Apple's little handheld could become the premier platform for viewing Flash content, you know, if it's done correctly. The problem is, though, it's the same thing that you have in the print world. And I know I use print examples a lot, but hey, I know that world, so there you go. But the problem is, anyone can get a hold of an application and call themselves a designer. And the stuff that I've seen people create with Adobe InDesign and Quark Express that they should not have created, you know, it's amazing just how much bad stuff there is out there. It's the same thing with Flash. Anyone can go ahead and get a copy of all the Flash development tools and start creating a website. It doesn't mean that they're qualified to create a good website. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a problem that is biting Adobe, because people look at crappy websites and go, well, Flash sucks. And okay, yeah, there's some performance issues depending on platform and all that, but the bottom line is there's really a lot of crappy Flash developers out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that unfortunately will reflect poorly on Apple and the iPhone, because that's a device that people will be viewing the content on. And you know, so by guilt by association, the iPhone or iPod Touch becomes part of the problem merely because it's the window to see the content.
And fine. And we touched on this last week, but I've got to jump on Apple here by saying that it's fairly ridiculous for Apple to basically just, you know, say that effectively that Flash doesn't matter, because Flash does matter. There are lots of sites out there that have Flash, which means that Safari on iPhone is not the entire interweb in your pocket. I said interweb for reals instead of just joking. It's not the entire internet in your pocket, because there's this large number of sites that it can't access because those sites are Flash-based.
Right. Now, I have found that's an issue for me. I will be out someplace, I need to look something up, and the website that I have to access to get at whatever this content is turns out to be Flash.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I'm screwed. Now, that doesn't happen a lot. I, in all honesty, the majority of the websites that I'm hitting are not relying on Flash. However, when I hit that site that does require Flash for me to do whatever it is that I want to do when I'm away from my MacBook Pro, I'm screwed. There's nothing I can do right now.
Mm-hmm. So now back to today's or this announcement. It wasn't today, but this announcement that we're covering from Adobe saying that they need Apple. The notion of calling it backpedaling, I think, is a bit ridiculous, because Adobe said from the beginning that we want to do it and we're going to try to do it with the SDK. Right. That's what they said. They said we're going to try. We're going to evaluate it. And now they're saying, well, we can't do it. We need Apple's help. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. That's the way it actually should be. Right? They've determined what they can do and what they can't do, and what they want to do is something they can't do without Apple's help. And so they said, hey, we need Apple's help with this. Well, give them a little round of applause for that. Don't
I'll throw on some applause too. Yeah. Woohoo. Right.
So
be that good as for Adobe.
Yeah, good for Adobe. Now, but again, this is more important for Adobe than it is for Apple, even though I think that Apple's arrogance on this issue is a mistake, and I think that they should do what they can to work with Adobe to make it happen. They should have been working with Adobe on this to make it happen from the get-go, frankly.
They should. Now, I'm just throwing this out, and I don't know if anyone would have a good answer, but I wonder if Macromedia had not been purchased by Adobe, and Flash would have remained a Macromedia product instead of becoming an Adobe product, would Apple have worked closely with Macromedia to make the Flash thing happen on the iPhone? I don't know.
I would hazard no. I think that what I've been told by parties involved is that Adobe and Apple have a good relationship, despite any time there's any kind of the appearance of the contrary. The two companies are very important to each other.
They are. And and honestly, from the things that I've seen, the comments that I've gotten from Adobe people, there's a good working relationship between the two. Occasionally there's friction, but hey, that happens with family all the time. So
sure, absolutely. It happens with companies that there was friction between Apple and IBM. There was friction between Apple and Motorola. I'm sure there's going to be friction between Apple and Intel at some point, even though it currently looks like Apple has Intel eating out of the palm of its hand.
Yeah, it kind of does.
So, that's just business, and that's just the way it's going to be, especially when you're talking about a company as driven and as focused as Apple is.
Yeah, yeah. Now, and speaking of business, what do you think about Sony's announced new business move?
What
into subscription music services?
Did you like my wooden wheel thing?
I did, and I have to share with you the vision that I had in my head, the whole wooden wheel thing. I was actually picturing the next extension of that when they start working on the green car, where they actually take the floor out of the car and you stick your feet down to the ground. Yeah, I was totally picturing Fred Flintstone's car.
Oh, yeah, I like that. I like that. and, the illusion, the imagery that I was trying to draw when I first started having a joke pop through my head, I was thinking of dinosaurs, but, there's no really technology related. Actually, I went to the Flintstone car from that in my head, but then I couldn't figure out a good bit of imagery for that, so I went to the wooden tire. My point is that I think that music subscription services are just about as dinosaurs as you can get at this point in this particular marketplace.
I'm surprised every time I see, and I shouldn't be surprised because this happens often enough, but I'm surprised every time I see a press release from a company saying that they've got the new greatest thing in the online music industry, and they start describing everything they're going to be doing, and it's a subscription service. And I'm thinking, dude, do you not have market analyst people on staff? Because this is not selling.
No, it's not. And the issue with music subscription services are that they are the perfect solution for every problem that the labels are having. Right?
But they're not the perfect solution for the consumers.
Exactly. And, the labels are just drooling at the idea of having recurring revenue. Recurring revenue that they don't have to earn. That's what they want.
Yeah.
That's what these people who have been trying to provide these services that's what they're trying to do too, because they also want the easy money. They don't want to actually have to earn the stuff. And you know, the recurring revenue model, where people are going to give you a flat fee month in, month out, no matter what you do, is often the dream goal for a lot of for a lot of people that are in business. And this is, I mean, you know, okay. So all that said, I loathe music rental services. I loathe them. But if they have some kind of model that will work, first of all, work with the iPod, that will be a trick. Secondly,
yeah, actually it would.
That would allow me, let's say I'm renting for $10 a month. And every month I'm going to get credit for anywhere in between 3 and 10 songs that I get to keep, which probably wouldn't be 10, but whatever. You know, 3 and 5 songs. Well, okay. That might make even me rethink about that. Because, you sure. know, the longer I rent, the more music I'm going to end up being able to buy to keep when I'm done. And, you know, and you can even look at the rental service as the big try it before you like it aspect that, you know, that it could be. That actually may be a solution that actually finds traction in the marketplace.
Okay, so what you want instead of a music rental service is a music rent to own service.
No, what I want is to buy my music. But I'm saying.
No, yeah. What you're saying is, if you were to find a rental service that you liked, it would probably be along the lines of a rent to own service.
No, what I'm actually saying is that I think that kind of model might find greater appeal.
Okay. Well, wanted to say rent to own, so I got it in there.
You did get it, and that's actually very clever. This still isn't a solution that I'm interested in, but I'm not trying to apply myself to the entire marketplace.
Why not? Aren't you the ultimate consumer?
Even I am not that arrogant.
All right, then. All right, so what it comes down to is we're both sitting here looking at Sony's brave new business model for music downloads and going, WTF.
Yes, because, you know, the labels need to pull their heads out of their collective asses, and they need to, instead of trying to find ways to get me to give them money month in and month out no matter what, they instead need to be finding better ways to deliver higher quality and better music to consumers at a lower price.
Okay, it's funny you should phrase it that way, because I was just sitting here thinking, hey, I've got a great idea of music industry. Why don't you untie the hands of your artists and let them create what they want instead of forcing us to have to listen to this homogenized white bread lowest common denominator drivel that gets put out so often?
Well, yeah, but you have to realize that some of the biggest established artists, the ones who benefit from the status quo, are actually want to preserve that status quo. That's why you see, I think, the broadest source of change in the music industry coming from up-and-coming bands, because they're the ones who are willing to think outside the box, because right now the box benefits the biggest names. And it's only been a few of the biggest names that have rebelled. And that's because, of course, you know, they like things the way they are. Some of them.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we need someone to rock the boat.
We do need someone to rock the boat. And I don't think another music subscription service, whether or not you get to rent to own, is going to do it. So good luck with that, Sony. You know, it's funny. So far, Sony has been batting 1,000 if 1,000 is actually 0.
They're batting 1,000 on opposite day?
On opposite day, yeah. You know, everything that they've done in the music world so far, since the iPod has come out, since Napster's come out, everything they've done has been wrong. They tried to force copy protection on us, and that was a miserable failure, not only technologically, but in terms of the marketplace. Marketplace utterly rejected copy protection on CDs. They finally released the Walkman in a digital format, and you know, locked it to their own proprietary schemes that were as limited to their own label. I mean, that's just crazy. Crazy stuff.
And don't forget that their proprietary scheme included one of the most atrocious compression algorithms for music ever created.
Yes.
I mean, wax cylinders produced better audio quality.
But you could pick up a wax cylinder on a car with wooden tires.
Yes, you could. That's right. You could tie it up to your dinosaur. Yeah.
So, you know, I said, if there's going to be a subscription service that works, this might be the right formula for it. I just still don't think it's the right solution. And these guys have just got to get off their idiot butts and stop thinking about what's best for their bottom line. Instead, think about what's going to resonate with the consumer. What's going to compel people to be interested in music again? Because it's the labels that have sucked the life out of this music world.
You know, the irony in that is that what really is best for the music industry's bottom line is to do exactly what you just said and not think about trying to find some way just to suck more money out of consumers. You know, find ways to make more compelling products, in this case, better music, for us to purchase in the first place.
They need to entice the money out of our wallets, because the music industry has more competition than ever right now, just as the movies have more competition than ever. There's the internet. There's massively multiplayer online role-playing games. There is YouTube, which is, you know, for all intents and purposes, free, except for the advertising that goes along with it. And they have to remember that they're providing a service, and that for people to pay for that service, it's got to be compelling. And I just long ago lost my feel for what they're doing. Now, speaking of rants and raves, we had one more thing we were going to talk about, and that's M-Audio and Eterol.
Right. And for those of you keeping track at home, Brian has ranted and raved occasionally about products from M-Audio and Eterol. Most recently, his issues getting his M-Audio breakout box to work on his computer because the company had not gotten around to writing drivers that were compatible with a version of Mac OS X he was using.
Right. They had, until recently, didn't have any drivers that worked with Leopard at all, despite, of course, having, you know, almost 2 years to develop them. And seeing as how I bitched about the company in that regards, since they have finally released beta drivers, it's time that I at least acknowledge the fact that they've got beta drivers out there. And I'm using them today.
So apparently they work.
Well, I hope so. I'm not monitoring what I sound like, so we can only hope that what readers or listeners have been listening to for the last 32 minutes and 55 seconds is good quality.
That's all we can hope for.
That is all we can hope for. So now, but there was a little bit of interesting stuff vaguely interesting at least, the aspects of this to talk about. One is that the Eterol FireWire breakout box that I ended up getting because M-Audio hadn't released their Leopard drivers worked with Mac OS X out of the box. It uses the various core components of Mac OS X to work, so it doesn't need third-party drivers.
And to me, that sounds like a really great thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was. At least with my PowerMac G5, it was, in fact, a great thing. I didn't have any problems with it ever. But in February, my PowerMac G5 was replaced with a 8-core, 2.8 gigahertz Intel January 2008 Mac Pro.
Sweet.
Okay. So I switched over to Intel. And I started having problems. For one, every time I plugged in the Eterol, I would get a kernel panic, an immediate kernel panic. So if I hot-plugged the Eterol device into my Mac Pro, I immediately got a kernel panic, even though I did not get kernel panics when I hot-plugged it into the MacBook Pro, the Intel-based MacBook Pro.
Okay, and for everyone that's wondering how the whole interfacing works with this, I'm assuming that this is a FireWire interface device.
This is a FireWire interface device. So you plug in a microphone or a guitar into the breakout box, And the breakout box is connected to my computer via FireWire cable. And it's basically doing the conversion of that analog signal into a digital signal that it then gives to the computer that I can record with in GarageBand or Logic Pro.
Perfect.
Okay.
Except when it kernel panics.
Yeah. Except when it kernel panics. And so now the fact that this Eterol device has been crashing, causing a kernel panic immediately when plugged in, that's probably an issue relating to macOS 10, because remember, it's not using third-party drivers.
Right. Now, the other thing it could possibly be, and if I'm wrong, I'm sure one of our listeners will chime in and let us know. I'm assuming that if there was an issue with the firmware that's built into the device, that it could cause an issue as well. But my money is on a driver issue on Apple's end.
That is, yeah, either one is possible. I haven't contacted Eterol yet, to be honest. I haven't actually contacted Apple yet either, but like I said, since I've been bitching about M-Audio so hard, I felt that we should probably bring the subject back and give our readers or our listeners, as it were, an update. I even went so far as to think that I had RAM that was bad.
Right. You've swapped out a lot of RAM in that computer trying to track this whole issue down.
Yeah, and I don't think it was the RAM at all. So I even had the RAM changed out by the company that I bought it from, and I think all the RAM was good to begin with. So, as a matter of fact, I'm running all the RAM that I had, including the RAM that I thought was bad, and it doesn't seem to be causing any problems. I'm also running through the M-Audio device because I was tired of getting the kernel panics from Eterol. So this week, between now and the next recording, I'm going to try to contact Eterol and see what they have to say. They might know of a solution or something like that, and we'll find out. But anyway, there you have it, folks. That's the update on that. That's it.
I'm looking forward to hearing how it all comes out. and I know I will hear how it all comes out.
That's true. You definitely will.
Yes.
And with that, I think it's time for the quick tip of the week.
You know, one of these days we're going to have to come up with a quick tip theme. Can we do that on a kazoo?
Yes.
I think it'd be better. All right. All right. So today's quick tip, this is one that I wrote back in December, and it's for our Leopard users again. In macOS 10.5, you have a very interesting printing feature that was added in, and that's that when you print a document, you get your print spool icon in the dock while your file is spooling and then going out to whatever your output device is. The feature is that when it's done printing, the icon stays in the dock. Okay, now for some people this is great because that gives them constant access to whatever's going on with their print spool and other printing features. Other people, though, don't like that because that's filling up their dock with icons that they don't want to see.
It clutters up my dock.
It clutters up your dock. All right, so if you don't like having that print spool icon in the dock all the time, here's how you fix that. You can actually now go in and change that so that it automatically goes away when a print job is done, just like you're used to seeing back in the good old days of Tiger. So what you want to do, when you have that printer icon in your dock, click and hold to bring up the contextual menu. Then you can choose Auto Quit from that contextual menu. Now what will happen whenever a print job finishes, it will automatically quit that print spool application and the icon will go away from your dock, just like that.
That is a fantastic quick tip of the week. Seriously.
I liked that one when I figured that out, because before that, I actually thought that I had a printer driver issue, and I was all pissed off, and I was going to start ranting about HP not being able to write printer drivers that work right, yada, 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 and I'm glad that I did some more research before I started ranting, because it turns out it wasn't a printer driver issue at all, or a printer description issue. It turned out to be a feature of Leopard.
It's a feature, not a bug.
That's right.
Well, thank you for explaining that to us. And I think we've got links to the printed version in the show notes.
Absolutely. It's there waiting for everyone right now.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah, and, wait, one thing.
Oh, okay.
One thing before we get to the comments and stuff. If one of our listeners has any interest in writing jingles for us, they should.
Oh, yeah. That would be great. I would love that.
Yeah, I'm a musician. I'm in a band, but I couldn't write a jingle to save my life. So I'd love to have some jingles. I'd love to have a Jeff's Quick Tip, you know, that sort of thing. That'd be just terrific.
And we need to come up with something cool to do for people that give us jingles.
Yeah, so
we'll have to figure that out.
We'll come up with something cool. We'll come up with something cool. Yeah, for one thing, you're going to get a mention at the end of the show. Every time.
Oh, like, there you go.
The jingle's provided by so and so. But we'll make it. Yeah, we'll come up with something cool. So think about that, folks. And if you know anyone that's in the jingle business, give them a ping.
That's right. Give them a ping. Okay, and now I can go on with the rest of what we say, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to Steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content was written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. That's us and John.
It is. John's part of that, too.
John is part of that. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.
Yeah.
Well, we're sorry, folks.
Oh.